Moto Casino, America's social casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends, with thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino, America's social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
You are listening to The Growth Signal. My name is Wilson Olte.
And I'm Mark Gordon.
And we're going to get right into it. Mark, what is your hot take?
My hot take is that the single biggest mistake small businesses make is hiring VPs of sales from large companies.
Oh, I wish that this was something that I haven't seen before, but I have been a part of these conversations where I see some hotshot come in, right? He was X so-and-so at X enterprise company and, you know, managed $300 million in revenue, and he's coming in to save this little startup. And it, I don't know that I've ever seen it work out.
100% failure.
So tell me more, like, how have you seen this? And if we're kind of in wild agreement that this is not the way to do it, why does it keep happening?
Because people don't get fired when they hire the VP of sales at Oracle and it doesn't work out. And so you have people who don't know what to look for when they're hiring, making the safest decision they possibly can. And it turns out that's the fatal one. And more importantly, they get board pressure too. There's, especially when we see companies that have raised money and they have a board, the board is always introducing their friend from this big company, this hotshot thing, and it never works. And there's many reasons it doesn't work, and we can certainly explore those. But it's something that if it ruffles the feathers of the VP of sales of these big companies because they think I'm doubting them, then they should get all fired up about it, because I am.
So if they're good enough for Oracle, Mark, why aren't they good enough for me?
Well, because it's a completely different job. And so, and it's not to just diminish one job over the other. In fact, I'm almost positive that I would get fired as the VP of anything for a company like Oracle, because I am not a rule follower and I do not like to be told how things are. And I like ambiguity and figuring things out and autonomy and the stress of it all being on me and not having the support system around me and all those different things. That's an environment I thrive in. And you have to be a very different kind of person when you're the VP of sales at Oracle. You have to thrive in an environment where there are real clear walls and rules and where there's support systems and you stay in your lane and you do your thing and you operate the system and you're good at navigating bureaucracy. There's a lot of really amazing skills. That's why those guys make a lot of money. It's not to say that those jobs aren't even harder potentially than being the VP of sales at a startup. I don't know. I've never had one. But what I do know is that the figure it out skills it takes to come into a company where there is no go-to-market strategy, or whether there's a limited one, or where marketing is also figuring it out, or maybe there's no marketing, or you have a founder that is supporting sales, doesn't know the answers yet, or maybe you don't even have product market fit, or maybe you don't know who your core customer is. The VP of sales from Oracle is not even asking themselves those questions. They're never going to figure those things out. That's not what they were wired to do. And so if you're looking for somebody who's going to have that entrepreneurial spirit to be your VP of sales lead, they better be somebody who has a history of figuring it out without any rules or any of the walls in place.
I resonate with that so much, because I too am one of those people that, like, someone once said to me on my podcast, that they were certifiably unemployable. And I feel that, like, deeply in my bones, because I do feel like I'm a little bit like certifiably unemployable, because the few times that I've stepped into those more corporate environments, I'm like, I don't belong here. Like, I need the let's roll up our sleeves and figure it out. I need to live in the ambiguity, because that's where I'm happiest. Ironically, a lot of my consulting work is consulting with people who are holding those more traditional structural roles, because I get brought in to help them figure out, like, how do we start to move into this new future with ambiguity? How do we change our internal culture or our sales approach or our marketing approach to continue to move forward? And I have always struggled with accidentally ending up in landmines where I didn't know there were politics afoot.
Yeah, it's a real thing in those organizations. And it's not, you know, there are things organizations do or don't do that make those things better or worse. But like, even just an environment where there's other people in your role at the company, provide you some sort of a backdrop to know how you're doing and to be able to compare yourself to other people and learn from other people. And in the small company, you have none of that. And so it's way more, you know, being lost at sea and still trying to have to figure out, you know, which way to go. And again, so these are just different people, different skill sets. And I think so often it just seems like an obvious fit. Well, they went from 30 million ARR to 300 million ARR and they led this growth. It's like, if you lead that growth at a big company, you're doing that with a ton of infrastructure around you. And a lot of times that person is riding a wave, whether it's an industry wave, a company wave, a CEO wave, and they're taking a lot of credit for things that maybe they had to be good at enough to do, but they weren't the driver behind it. And so I just think that when you're hiring for a role, you need to know, do you need somebody to fit your system or do you need somebody to build the system? And you have to know right up front that those are two very different people and you're looking for very different things.
And I think too, there's a lot of brand equity that I don't think a lot of people take into consideration, right? Like if you have two products that you're evaluating and it's, let's just say it's Nike versus a shoe brand you've never heard of. And all things equal, they are the same color, the same price, they'll arrive on the same day. Everything is the same except one is Nike and one is, you know, a different brand. One is Cinnamon. Which one are you buying?
Well, Nike, which is by the way, the first thing we do when we work with the no label shoe brand is make sure that they're never the same color and the same price and the same and the same and the same. Because if you haven't figured out how you're going to be different, then you don't even know why you exist. Because nobody needs more shoes that are just like Nike's, but not Nike.
Right. Exactly. And I think businesses fall into that trap, though, because the shoes make sense, right? We can change our color a little bit. We can offer something new. We can offer something different. But there's a lot of like B2B business out there in particular that are really just trying to follow the blueprint. And this is exactly back to your hot take as to why they hire the VP, the hotshot VP of sales from, you know, we're picking on Oracle, but from Oracle to come in and help them scale their software startup. So I can understand the psychology of why people are doing it this way. What should we be looking for instead?
Yeah, I mean, again, I think you need there a track record of people who have gone from zero to one. And whether they were a former CEO and maybe they sold their company and flamed out, or whether they were just the first sales guy at a company and they were able to figure that process out. Or they were the first sales manager for a company and they can explain to you the things they built and changed between when they got there and when they left and how that infrastructure or the decisions they made led to X, Y, and Z. And I guess really, if I had to simplify it, I should have just started with this. Have they been responsible for the results in a real way where if they didn't get it done, the company went out of business and been responsible for figuring it out with that sort of pressure? And because that is something that once you've lived in that pressure and you've done it for a while, it can start to feel like, you know, normal. But until you've lived there, man, when you realize everyone's job, you walk into a small company and you're the new head of sales, and you realize everybody here's ability to feed their families is dependent on you being able to figure this out. That's not anything like being the vice president of sales at XYZ company, right? That is like a whole different level of responsibility. By the way, the investors' money and the CEO's dreams and everyone's are depending on you, and all the eyes are on you. And when you either are the kind of person that goes, okay, cool, like I was born for this, or you pretend, or what most people do is pretend that they're going to be able to figure it out. And then they're just going to either like work harder or do a little bit more, or they're constantly asking for more budget. And like the machine never gets built. And by the way, also a lot of those people have never actually done the work, right? Like sometimes you got to be the one who goes and sells the stuff. It's not just about hiring a guy and creating it. Like sometimes you just got to get on the phone and do it. You know, I started my own companies when I was very young. There were Fridays I went home not knowing how I was going to make payroll on Monday and had to figure it out. Like that experience is completely invaluable, and right, it makes no spotlight seem too heavy, right? But so I think you need people who have survived those different things.
I actually, and we didn't talk about this before the show, but longtime listeners will know that I joined a pre-revenue startup right out of college to be their sales and marketing person. I had no idea what I was doing. I had no business. They should have never taken me on. But in the end, it worked out. It worked out, and it worked out good. But that was my rationale when I had, you know, the normal offer from a real company that actually would have paid me and I would have been one of many. I told people, I'm like, I want to be one of one where every single day I'm going to go into work and my work matters. And if I don't do it, it doesn't even happen. And so like that was one of my motivators to join a startup, because I wanted to feel that my work actually mattered to the business. And it wasn't just, hey, if I called in sick for a week, nothing, you know, it might slow down a little bit, but nothing really changes.
Yeah. Listen, some people, and it sounds like you're a little bit like this, and, you know, I'm putting a negative spin, I'm like this. My ego needs to get fed by knowing that I'm good at what I do, and my self-worth comes from going on those journeys, right? And so to be one of 100 people in a role in a company, even if I finish number one, because I've had that experience before too, like that fades fast, right? Because it's like, okay, well now what, right? Like what, like I have to, in order for me to do my best work, I have to be striving to something that feels like it's just over the hill. And then when I get there, I have to feel like there's another hill I can see. And so that's an environment where I thrive. But I think, you know, I live in a place in a beautiful neighborhood where we're in very nice houses, and a lot of people have like tech sales jobs or these, you know, different jobs. They're administrators at a hospital. And I see them, they spend their whole lives trying to, while they're at work, trying to navigate for what they're going to do when they get home. And brothers, I have no judgment in this. And it's like, you know, they're great parents and, you know, whatever, and they have all their different interests. But I never wanted to be that. You know, I love working, and my huge part, I have great kids. I have a wife. It's amazing. I work with my wife. But my sense of satisfaction about my place in the world comes from me helping other people get to where they want to go. And that's something I do through work. And so that's been my choice in the journey. So that's my hot take that we've eaten up the whole interview over.
I'm obsessed with that, because it's so funny. We've never met each other before. Like, we met through a podcast matching service. I am exactly the same way. People think I'm crazy, but I live for Monday morning, right? Like Sunday night, I'm like, oh, thank God tomorrow's Monday. I'm so ready to go like get back into my business, because I truly love what I am doing and what I am building. And I recognize that that is not the norm of what we are doing, but that's, you have to find those people. If you're going to do a startup, if you're going to be a small business, you have to find someone who relishes the work, not someone who relishes the weekend. And that is, again, no shade to the corporate mindset. And we all live for the things that we live for. But if you're just getting someone who is used to saying, oh, I took you from 30 million to 300 million, that is definitely not the same from zero to one. I will argue that zero to one is so, so difficult, and that 10X is easier than, you know, that 1X kind of motion.
Maybe. And, you know, I'm so afraid to say difficult, right? Because I don't know, right? And I'm sure it comes with all of its own very difficult stuff, right? You know what I mean?
Maybe not difficult. Maybe just
different skill set.
Different.
It's a different skill set, right? It is. And by the way, I'm not sure it's a skill set I have, so I'm going to look at it with some sort of with admiration, right? I just know that once a company has 200 people in it, I'm probably no longer interested in working. Once I can no longer have an individual relationship with people I'm depending on, and I feel like I'm part of a machine, like that's about the point that I lose interest, right? For me. And so, you know, I like to know the people I'm working with and the impact we're making. I like to be able to see the scoreboard and feel like I'm the driver of it. So let's
get really into the specifics, right? Like, if I'm hearing this and I've got a team and when I'm on the smaller side, I'm looking for my sales rock star. How do I figure out who is the right fit for me, for my business, for what I'm looking for, and not just the flashiest headline on LinkedIn?
Yeah, I mean, again, and by the way, I was not a drug dealer, but I will just share that there are certain entrepreneurial spirit type things that you see from zero to one people, which are just like, hey, I noticed that there's people who want to buy this thing. And I noticed I can make money if I sell it. And so like, and then I become obsessed with being really good at it. Right. And so, and you're looking for that sort of a pass, right? Where it's like, whether it was the guy who, you know, it was, if you're a realtor, right? Like, you become a realtor and you're not getting leads, like that's a zero to one job. Like, you're like, hey, trust me with the biggest financial decision you're going to make, and I'm going to guide you through it. And like, because you saw my picture in my ad or whatever, like zero to one, you got there. And like, you got someone with that selling life insurance, right? Like, that's a zero to one job. Like, you want to find somebody who at some point in their life, right, has a real track record of going like, I wanted to do this thing. I set a goal for myself. I figured it out and I made it happen. And it wasn't in somebody else's pre-designed system, right? It was a system of me figuring it out for myself and going for it. And so it's the figure it out people, right? And again, that, and that here's the characteristic I think that you'll see most in figured out people is that they're completely unafraid of what other people are going to think when they fail. I am like so not wired to think that anyone's even paying attention enough to me to see when I failed. Like to me, no one's paying attention. Like I hear these, see these patterns online, like you're gonna have to change your friends as you get bigger. And like, everyone's rooting against you. And like, I'm like, I never thought anyone was thinking about me at all. I was like, you know, I'm just trying to go. And by the way, people that were thinking about me, I assumed were rooting for me because I would have been rooting for them. And like, I don't have any of that. Like, you're a failure. I'm perfectly comfortable failing in front of everybody, right? Maybe with the sports or whatever else, you just get there, right? And so I think that's a big part of it too, is you have to know that part of the success is going to be 30 humiliating days of failure where you're going to go home and feel like somebody stole your lunch money. And then tomorrow you like get up and you're going to do it again. And so that's my business amnesia that I think allows me to be a builder.
It's funny, by the way, I'm going to go back to your drug dealer comment, because I actually had someone on the show a couple of months ago who said his best sales guy ever was a guy who had been convicted for drug dealing. He got out, got clean, and then he eventually became his top seller. And he's like, that guy was the best seller I've ever met, because he knew how to have conversation about what people wanted. He knew how to bring that to the table. And I was like, well, I guess maybe we have a little bit to learn from what is obviously a thriving business around the world.
I just want to say one more thing about it. Think about it. There's zero barrier to entry, right, in that space. So in order for you to be significantly better than everybody else in a dangerous world where there are no rules or laws to protect you, it is the ultimate figured out thing. And you could say, well, you're selling a product that people get addicted to, and that's very real, right? But they have a million options most of the time for who to get it from. And it's a commodity-based business, right? So it is, at its very core, a marketing and sales position with obstacles in place, right? And so, again, I'm not saying anyone who's ever sold drugs would be your best salesperson, but if you find somebody who was good enough where the police put him in jail for it, there was a reason that guy was moving weight. You know what I mean? And that was in a competitive environment. So I know I'm not saying go out and hire drug dealers at all, but what I am saying is there's a spirit in people who are the people who will figure out how to sell anything and make money to do it, and are able to figure out how to position themselves in a way where in a competitive marketplace, they're the ones who are going to win. Those are the people that you want on your team.
Yeah. And I also think too, you talked about like the amnesia that comes along with, you know, because you're going to get rejected over and over again, and you're going to fail over and over again. I also think you need this spirit of, it'll work out for me. Like, oh yeah, it'll work out eventually. It might not work out today. It might not work out tomorrow, but you almost have to have like an unrealistic, like unreasonable optimism that you will be able to make it happen. Otherwise, you are going to get beat down real fast.
I think that's true if you're a business owner and you're going to succeed.
I should clarify, I am. So that I'm right. The owner-seller role.
I'll just share with you, I have seen some unbelievable salespeople in the course of my career who are absolutely convinced that tomorrow was going to be the last day they ever sold anything. And that paranoia drove them to go so hard, right? Then they were, you know, some of the best loan officers I ever met. By the way, that's a loan officer. You're hustling for your lunch every month. Every month is its own war. Okay.
Yeah.
Some of the best ones I ever met, shout out Fred, if you're listening, are people who like literally were like, if the phone didn't ring for, like, you know, they have the biggest pipeline conversion, the phone didn't ring for one day, they're like, it's over. And like the drive was so real because of that worry that it was all going to go away. Right.
Yeah.
And so I do think there's a lot of different ways you can be motivated for sales. I think you do have to have what I call irrational competence to be a great leader of a company and to do that. And so, you know, that's a term I stole from Bill Simmons, who's a sports commentator. We talk about irrational confidence guys. Like, you know, those guys in the NBA, you'll call the bench, start firing threes and assume they're all going to go in. You need one of those guys on your team. I do think
day he'll be right, right? Like one time he'll be right. And that's when you need it.
That's it, right? Game 6 of the finals and suddenly the ball's going in. So, you know, you want somebody who's willing to take that risk, right? And not be afraid of the failure. It's all the same things, right? It's if I fail enough times, I just think with this, I'm going to figure it out, right? I have to figure it out, right? Those are the ones who end up winning the game.
What do you think is the biggest blind spot that we have when it comes to going from zero to one?
It depends on who you're talking to. It depends on, so when you say the people who are doing it, the people who haven't started yet, the people who, you know.
I think the people who know they need to do it and aren't quite sure where to start.
I think the short answer is, the blind spot is that you think that someday miraculously you're going to have enough information to start. I started my first company because the company I was working at went out of business. And I went and looked for other places like it because I loved it so much and I was doing so well. And I didn't find one. So I decided I'd build it. And I went out with a PowerPoint presentation to everyone I knew at $1 million. I said, please give me $1 million. And the people said yes. And so and then I started a company, not knowing anything and being in my early 20s, right? Mid-20s, maybe. So, you know, this idea that like there's going to be some moment where you feel ready to be the CEO of a company or you feel ready to get started, it's never coming. You have to just start. And you have to start and you have to get your lifestyle in a place where you can, where failure is not literally fatal. And prepare yourself for burn the boats. You know, it's like, hey, and by the way, look around and realize the people who have figured out are not exceptional. They're usually not better than you. It's certainly not better than you overall. And like, I've just very rarely seen anyone who was like 100% committed to figuring something out and wasn't going to quit and not figure it out. Like everyone quits when they're in the dip. That's really what it comes down to. Like I just started this company in June. In September, I was like, I don't think we have a product. So then I came up with a new product. And it was like, okay, well, we got one, then we got another one. And all of a sudden it was like, man, most people just quit right before it gets good. And so it's that idea that like, look around, you're like, man, I'll just do it. Like I'll start calling people in my industry and be like, just talking about yourself. And I'm like, I'm fucking better. Sorry.
No, it's all good.
I'm better than this guy. You know what I mean? I certainly want it more. Like if that guy did it, I can do it. You know? And I think that's like a really important thing is, and don't listen to whether anybody else says you can or you can't. Though people get very obsessed about that. It's, do you believe you can or you can't? Right. And I would say you want to expose yourself to the information that proves to you that you can, because you can, everybody can, but like go out and meet the other people who are doing it and realize like, is that person fundamentally different than me in a way that is, that's the reason they're succeeding? Probably not. Probably just had the guts to go for it or had no other choices because they just got out of prison and they had to go sell stuff. You know what I mean? Like that, like limited up people become entrepreneurs because they don't have any other options or because they were just brave enough to go for the thing they wanted. And so if you have this cushy thing and you're not brave, you're going to be stuck waiting for the perfect moment that's never going to come.
Yep. Side note, as we're wrapping up here, you just name dropped, I don't know if you did this on purpose, but two of my favorite books that I mentioned over and over again on this podcast, one called Burn the Boats and one called The Dip. So if you haven't read either of those, you're going to have to check those out because I think I talk about those two books over and over and over again. Particularly The Dip is one that by Seth Godin that I probably mention like once a week.
Very cool. Yeah.
So considering all the people that you know or aspire to know, who else is out there? Who else should we be paying attention to?
So I think about this a lot and I'm trying to think of like an ironic answer. And my answer is Elon Musk. And I think that's like a very strange answer maybe to people because you're like, man, that guy gets so much attention. And I'm trying not to pay attention to him. Maybe you don't like him. Whatever. Everyone's got their own feelings about him. Put your feelings aside. Okay. This is both in the go-to-market sales and marketing space and in the non-sales and go-to-market space, the most interesting man in the world. And if you're not paying attention to it and seeing what you can learn from it, you're really missing a golden opportunity. Somebody who started 7 unicorn companies, even the entire AI boom. This is a guy who named OpenAI, put the money up for it, set the guidelines for it. Eventually, you know, they had a breakup, but just another thing that he was a part of. But what I would really ask you to pay attention to if you're in sales or marketing is the amount of time and energy that Elon puts into sales and marketing. You say, well, Mark, what do you mean? Elon must need to go on podcasts. He doesn't have to go build his personal brand. He doesn't have to be doing all the public facing things that he does. But he understands the value in building up that brand and having that equity and having that reach to the point where he actually bought Twitter, right? He bought and turned it into X, right? For that reach, because he understood the advantages of being an influencer and having that platform and doing those different things. And so you guys say, this is the best engineering mind we have. This guy builds products we need and he builds them better than anybody else. And he gets them built for cheaper than everybody else. And by the way, all of that isn't enough. None of it is enough.
Right.
You have to go out and have to go to market. You have to have the strategy for marketing and sales. You have to have the distribution that is required to take those things over the finish line. That guy is the best at all of those things. And so if you're not paying attention and whether you like him or not, or agree with them or not, political, whatever, you have to be learning from him. And so that's somebody you should pay more attention to.
And if someone is connecting with you, they love this story, they loved your background and what you had to say today, where can they find you online?
If they hate me, they should message me too. It's IGTMS.com, Integrated Go-to-Market Solution, IGTMS.com, or Mark D. Gordon on LinkedIn. All my contact information is there. My phone number is there. So you can really harass me if you're mad at me after today.
And if you are looking for me, my name is Alyssa Nolte. You can find me on LinkedIn. If you find the Notorious Plant Killer, you know you have found the right Alyssa Nolte. I'm also on Substack under Alyssa Likes to Talk. Mark, thank you so much for coming on and having this conversation today. Thank you for really opening the door to a conversation about what it takes to be successful, what it takes to go from 0 to 1 versus 30 to 300. I think this is something that people really need to hear as they're thinking about what the future of their company looks like.
Thank you so much for having me. You did an amazing job. I really appreciate it.
Here's golf legend John Daly.
Hell yeah, these wins are piling up faster than my divorces.
I only spent on Moto, America's social casino. You know I've won a couple of majors. And on Moto, I've won majors, grands, and epic jackpots on their classic Vegas slots with huge, huge bonus rounds. Moto Casino adds new games and awards players free coins every single day. Grip it and spin it on Moto Casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today. Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details.
Moto Casino, America's social casino.
You're listening to a podcast right now, driving, working out, walking the dog. If you're into podcasts, chances are you have something to say too. With RSS.com, starting your own podcast is free and easy. Upload an episode and we distribute it to Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon Music, and more. Track your listeners, see where they're from, and start earning from ads just like this. If you've been thinking about starting a podcast, this is your sign. Start your new podcast for free today at RSS.com.